Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Morning Voice. My name is Tom Moulton, and I'm your host every Thursday. We got a great bunch of folks that are doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. And, of course, Dr. Ackerley will be here tomorrow at 7 o'clock with some wonderful University of Arizona stories. Today, it's a big day for us because we have been asked from some of our tourism folks to talk a little bit about the Dragon Bravo fire. Now, Matt, you've done a great job since July 4th to give us the headlines, but there's some stories behind the headlines. And we'll have a very special guest from the gateway to the Grand Canyon that lives in Flagstaff and has a lot of contacts here, especially with the Davis-Monthan base. As a huge citizen of support for Flagstaff now that she's moved there. And she's got some really insights of what the tourism industry is doing, and supporting, of course, the over 1,200 folks that are up there in northern Arizona fighting this fire. The fire started on July 4th. And it's still going strong. And, you know, one of the headlines, which is really scary, is that it remains active and largely uncontained. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in detail. Of course, Matt, you might remember the Bighorn fire.
Sure.
And that fire was in 2020?
I think it was right in the middle of the was that the one that was right in the middle of the pandemic?
You're right. That was our largest fire here in southern Arizona, and it's one of the things, especially in tourism, fire is certainly scary, not only for folks planning on traveling to a destination, but certainly for those that are involved in the fire. And that fire burnt over 119,000 acres. North of Tucson in the Catalina Mountains, the beautiful Catalina Mountains,
I should say.
Yes, it did. And this fire is over 130,000.
Yeah.
And just a few days ago when we were asked to talk a little bit about this fire, it was 123,000 acres. Yeah. So, and having a brief conversation with the Forestry Service yesterday before we came on air, and they had a public meeting in Page, the excitement level, the wrong kind of excitement level, is how are we going to put this fire out?
Right.
Because it continues to grow. The weather is cooperating a little bit, just to bring you up to speed, 30% humidity, I believe, and there is a chance of the monsoons finally reaching up there as well, but the fire continues to grow. And later in the show, we have a clip from a fire professional that is doing the best he can to figure out where the fire is going so the firefighters can all be there to help combat the fire. So before we get into this, this is really not good news, but I think after you listen to some of the comments from the folks is that they're doing the very best that they can. There's a lot of dedicated individuals up there fighting the fire, and they are doing a pretty good job, I think, keeping the public informed. And of course, there are evacuations that have gone on, and of course, they've lost over 70 structures, historical structures. What's going on in southern Arizona? Tim Vimberstedt, the co-host, is on the phone.
Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning. As you know, you'll be instrumental today in talking with our guests from Flagstaff, because you have a long background with her, especially from her support of tourism in Davis-Monthan. But let's get started.
Absolutely.
Here with, because we have quite a few things going on in August, even though we're getting record temperatures, 100 and I think you said did she 111 or
111? Yes, indeed.
111.
And I'm taking that as I'm taking the silver. Here's the silver lining for Matt. Is yesterday the forecast for today was 113. So let's take our little victories where we can find them, gentlemen.
You know, and Matt, for the first time, I thought I should have brought a sweater today.
What?
In the studio, of all places, because it is chilly in here. Okay. I need to get some hot coffee in here right away. But, you know, it's hot out there, and I had a tourism meeting yesterday and had to walk through Old Tucson to learn more about the nightfall coming up in October. And, you know, so that short little... it's not quite a quarter of a mile, maybe an eighth of a mile and 100 and whatever it was yesterday. You're drenched by the time you get into. The good thing is, with the county's help, they added three new air conditioners into the saloon. So it was very comfortable once you got into the saloon. And we'll talk maybe a little bit about that if we have time today, because they did release information on the upcoming nightfall. I think, I want to say it was 34, but I'm not sure, years that they've been doing Nightfall, and they have some wonderful scares. Fear is Fun is their theme, Timmy, this year, and they did everything they could to scare the media yesterday during the press conference. So tell us what's going on in August here, Timmy.
Well, we have Chillin' at the Chule. You check out music, spirits, and bites at Tohono O'Toole's Summer Series. It's on Saturdays. Tohono O'Toole has partnered up with the Children's Museum of Oro Valley to provide family-friendly nature play. And it's from 6 to 9 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays through August, so you can go tomorrow or Saturday. The cost is free. Just bring some money for food and drinks. Our old friend Patrick Fahey is the chef out there, and so you know you're going to get some good food. Summer Safari Nights 2025, beat the heat and explore the outdoors with Reed Park Zoos. Summer Safari Nights on Fridays and Saturday evenings. Runs from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday at the Reed Park Zoo. Great way to get out and cool off a little bit after a long, hot day. And then, of course, we have cool summer nights out at my old stomping grounds, the Desert Museum. Enjoy the sights of the Desert Museum at night in much cooler temperatures. You know, bring a flashlight because it is dark out there. All the animals are far more active during the summer at night. They've got the stingray touch tanks and lots of themed activities. And that's going to run through August 31st at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. And then you just mentioned Old Tucson. Saguaro's is taking place again August 12th. And they're having great success with this. An eclectic array of arts, crafts, food, vendors, summer evening strolling the historic Main Street. They've got local artists and live music, tasty food and drink. The event is free. So a free event at Old Tucson. And then we have the Sabino Canyon Nightcrawler. Sabino Canyon Nightcrawler tours return Saturdays now through October 25th. And that's a lot of fun. 7:30 to 9 p.m. on Saturdays at the Sabino Canyon Recreation Area, 5700 North Sabino Canyon Road.
Now, Timmy, to find out more information about these and others, we rely on our sponsor, Visit Tucson.
VisitTucson.org and thisistucson.com.
Thank you, Timmy. I knew you were going to say that, but I forgot to write it down for you. So thank you.
Twitter.
You know, it's the number of events, it just seems like... I haven't seen this many events in the month of October.
August. Busy August is what you're saying?
Busier, it seems like, and it's the hottest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But, you know, it does, that 20, 30-degree shift normally happens, and it just seems like yesterday, planning on going to Old Tucson, it was 7 o'clock when I got in the car, and it said it was 90 degrees. And I confirmed that over breakfast with some friends, and their cars also said it was 90 degrees. So it wasn't, my car wasn't exceptionally hot by itself. It was just hot everywhere. And when you start out at 90 degrees, when the sun comes up, you don't have much success in lowering the temperature throughout the day. But
so, Jens, has it been a push this year to kind of step up the number of off, let's just call it off-season events? I mean, you guys are both living and breathing this stuff every week. So is this, was there a push this year to kind of have a little bit more activity going on?
Yeah, there's definitely the conversation amongst the Tourism Bureau and the attractions to continue moving forward to a year-round tourism product. And so, of course, we have our indoor attractions that you've heard me talk about, and Mini Time Machine is certainly, but there's a lot of art museums and that, you know, are beautiful 72 degrees. And, of course, the cave, Colossal Cave, Karchner Cave, you know, they're always a perfect 72 degrees. But, yes, absolutely. I had some good friends up there in Branson, Missouri, and they were very successful in launching a holiday, extended holiday, and their goal was to, can we make these destinations year-round? And they've been very successful, and I think that we're all working together to do that. And these are high-quality events. Old Tucson said 4,000 people attended the one that 2 weeks ago, the Sunset Festival. 4,000 people in 3 hours, Timmy, and you know what that means.
I remember it.
We didn't get those numbers only during nightfall. Parking, overflow parking. People, you know, elbow to elbow. And the good thing is it's become such a success, they're staffed up for it, and they did a really nice job. And that's why they added that extra event in August that you just mentioned. Well, we're going to be back in just a few minutes, and we're going to be talking about the Dragon Bravo Fire, which is on the north rim of the Grand Canyon, and we're going to be interviewing around 7:30 or so some folks that are from Flagstaff, and they're going to tell us about what they're doing during this fire. We'll be right back. This is The Voice on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. Well, we're back, and my name is Tom Moulton, and I'm the executive director of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, one of the sponsors of this fine show every Thursday. And, of course, Visit Tucson has lent their support over 27 years or so, co-founders of the Attractions Alliance. That is, sole mission is to create awareness of all the wonderful world-class attractions that we have here in our region. In just a few moments, we're in around 7:30 or so, maybe 7:33 to be exact, right, Matt? We're going to have our first guest, and we're talking about the Dragon Bravo Fire. And I just wanted to kind of set the story here while Matt is going to be prepared to play that fire behavior analyst Stuart Turner's conversation he had with the public yesterday. But just to get a sense of 130,000 acres have burned since July 4th. Now, how does that impact tourism? Well, I thought I'd just give you a little bit of some of the statistics. Of course, the Grand Canyon is in North Rim and the South Rim. The South Rim gets about 85-90% of the folks that come there from the world. And the North Rim gets 10 to 15 or maybe 17% of the volume of tourists through the year as well. Now, there's some very unique historical structure on the Ponderosa Forest, some very unique cultural sites that are in the North Rim. And it does, it is a different look and a feel than the South Rim. And so the South Rim is open. And a lot of the guests that were planning on coming to the North Rim have been notified. And, of course, there's been a lot of cancellations, of course, of the horses and the mules. And of course, the, unfortunately, one of the historical Grand Canyon Lodge burnt down to the ground, and as well as 70 other structures. So that's absolutely devastating. It's the largest fire so far this year in the United States, seventh largest, the history at this point. And that, unfortunately, may change in the wrong direction. Vehicle count. This is interesting. In 2024, the North Rim did 81,473 vehicles. So if the average vehicle is three folks, 3.1, whatever it is these days, that's still a lot of people that go to the North Rim, or went to the North Rim, I should say, last year. The South Rim, 1.5 million vehicles. So times three, you can do the math. Tremendous amount of tourism traffic that goes to the Grand Canyon. Now, here's what happens, though, generally, when, and this happened during the Bighorn Fire. The media, it's all about headlines. And I recall back then, besides with the pandemic going on, and of course, you know, we always thought we were going to recover sooner than what happened in reality. But what happens is when you say something's on fire, the media spends a lot of time talking about it, and people think the entire state of Arizona was on fire, or at least the entire southern Arizona region was on fire in 2020, and very devastating. Of course, many structures and saguaros forests were damaged beyond, obviously, them coming back. But fire is just devastating, no matter how you look at it. But that is a lot of people that had vacations, summer, the busiest time in tourism generally is the summer, because the kids are out of school. And the average, it's a little shorter than what it used to be, but international travel, they spent a lot of time putting that together. And of course, it's hard, you know, and a lot of the travel insurances don't cover fire. I don't know why, but they don't cover fire. So a lot of the folks in Grand Canyon, the National Forestry Service and the National Park Service have done everything they can to assure people, please come to Arizona. The entire state's not on fire. The South Rim is open. The train to Grand Canyon through Williams, you'd be happy to know, Matt, is operating, and it's on schedule. And so they're able to capture, I don't know what the percentage is. Maybe perhaps Ellen knows that when we get her on the on the show in a few minutes. But they're doing their best. The tourism bureaus, Flagstaff, Page, all of them in the area are doing their best to get a hold of these people and let them know that you're still welcome to come to the South Rim, and hopefully you know, they can reschedule their activity and you know, find a place to stay, and so on and so forth. But obviously, in the headlines, and I read a lot of them, Matt, over the last 2 days, it's the worst kind of headline that you want to read about a destination that depends. What is that? 1.5 times 3? What is that? Over 4 million? I had to do the math real quick here.
Sure, 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5 million that are coming to that one little. It's not a big area if you think about it. I mean, in the sense that because everybody wants to see the falls, they want to see, you know, and they want to see the water, they want to see the Grand Canyon, the Big Hole, they want to do the mules, they want to see the Colorado River. you know, down below, and there's so much, there's so much to see in the Grand Canyon because it's so large, but there's smoke as well.
Yep.
And that smoke varies from day to day. Right now, from what we're hearing, the smoke is not descending on Flagstaff, mm-hmm. Or the South Rim. You can see the plume, of course, and they're doing smoke press conferences as well, because obviously that affects people's respiratory systems. So we just got we have a hard break, don't we, at 7:30? Okay, so we're probably going to end up having to play some of these, Matt, a little bit later on, because I've been, you know, trying to set the stage here of how impactful this fire is. And of course, one of the videos or one of the audio tracks that you'll hear about is what happens very quickly after a fire. They go right into the recovery. And because this is such an important tourism area and it's damaged so many buildings, what's happening in the tourism side, the resiliency, it's a hard word for me to say, so, but the comeback, you know, the planning, the public support. This fire is being fought by many federal agencies. It's just not one. So the National Forest, certainly the National Park System, the agricultural group in Washington. You can only imagine that anybody that has anything to do with national lands is involved in fighting this fire. 1,200, I think I mentioned. 900 people have been evacuated. They're trying to keep some of the things open, like the Jacob Lake Inn and a camper village are open. The Jacob Lake campground is closed, though, of course. And the wind's planning on being 30 miles per hour in the canyon. And I can only imagine how this fuel, the fire is being fueled. So we're going to be back with Alan and with Tim in just a few moments. This is KVOI, 10:30 a.m., and this is The Morning Voice. Be right back. Well, welcome back. This is The Morning Voice, and I'm your host, Tom Moulton. That was actually good news, Matt, that we heard at the head of the news broadcast. That hasn't even reached the headlines here in Southern Arizona. So I think that's good news. It's basically said from yesterday was the fire was only 13% contained, and now it's up to 30%. There's now over 1,300 personnel that is fighting the fire. So that is obviously the weather and the number of folks that are out there on the fire lines. We want to talk a little bit in the next 30 minutes or so about what is the overall tourism impact. We don't have all the statistics, and of course that'll all be wrapped up once the fire is contained. But Tim, you were able to find a very special person that both of us know, and all the honors is yours, sir, to introduce her.
I will do so. We have on the phone, I believe she's on the phone right now.
Yes, she is.
Okay. She is the director of sales at the Embassy Suites by Hilton in Flagstaff. Not just a fantastic tourism ambassador, but one of my favorite people on the planet. So, Ellen, can you join us?
Hi, Tim. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. This is pretty exciting.
Well, I wish the topic was something different.
Yeah, I agree.
When Tim and I were talking about who's one of the experts, and, you know, being a not only the director of sales and marketing, but you're ambassador of the Greater Flagstaff Chamber. You're on the Tourism Commission, City of Flagstaff, Arizona. And you come to the north, being a star down here in the southern Arizona region. And Timmy, I thought, you know, and this will be a nice interaction between the two of you, because what Ellen has and is still doing with the community regarding Davis-Monthan is something else.
Yeah, she's still an active member of the Desert Thunder Squadron, past commander of that squadron, which is a nonprofit we put together years ago just to support the airmen of Davis-Monthan. And I had the honor of being her fundraising chair when she was the commander and executive director of that organization.
And just like you, Tim, you did. You jumped right up to do it. I don't know that we gave you a lot of choice, but you sure didn't back down when we asked you to do it.
No, well, thank you.
It was great.
It was an important cause, and it was fulfilling, and we were both honorary commanders at the same time and at Davis-Monthan, and it was a great idea. And you founded that nonprofit. Yeah, I think you were the first leader. Yeah.
Well, we were certainly hated for you to go up to the north, but we are extremely happy that you're still engaged down here in the south.
Oh, Tucson will always have my heart. I appreciate that. And for a spell there, even in the tourism capacity, I was working in Flagstaff and Tucson at the hotel I was working at. So I was commuting to both cities, which was perfect for me, because I believe in that we all need to be engaged and involved in our communities. And so it was quite a way for me to absolutely be engaged and involved in both Flagstaff and Tucson. And so now I'm super grateful that I still get to be a part of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base as a alumni, honorary commander, just like Tim. We both still get to use our voice for our airmen at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base because they truly can't, but we can. And any way we can support them and show them how much we appreciate them, we do. And then I'm on SADA, which is the Southern Arizona Defense Alliance. So we advocate on behalf of all of our Southern Arizona bases, military bases, installations, which is fun. And then thank goodness I'm still on the Arizona Bowl Game Board of Directors. So I get to help support and honor our military first responders, teachers, and healthcare workers every year at our bowl games.
Yeah, it was exciting one year to have the Air Force College, you know, folks were here playing in the Arizona Bowl. You may recall that.
Wasn't that a great game when the Air Force Academy was here? They were able to go out to the base, too, and commiserate with them. Yeah, that was a wonderful bowl game. I think every game has just gotten better and better.
Yeah, and the community supports the military coming out to the game. There's no free tickets, but the community steps up and buys the tickets for the folks there at the base, as well as the teachers here in our community. Now, Timmy, tourism, as you know, all three of us have kind of made a living marketing and increasing in tourism, because we've all been successful over the years. Tim, are you born and raised here or a longtime resident? I can't recall.
I moved here in 1982.
Okay.
I'm from Youngstown, Ohio.
And Ellen, what about you?
I was born here in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Oh, okay, okay.
Grew up here, moved to Tucson. And then my family moved back to Flagstaff, and then I graduated from high school here in Flagstaff.
So I think all of us were here during the Bighorn Fire. I've been here since 1997, and I think I've been through three fires, all in the Catalina area. and how that has affected tourism. But you know, we do bounce back fairly quick. But you know, anything to do with Mount Lemmon, especially when the Summer Haven community was completely devastated. So clearly, there our folks, our friends up in the North Rim are experiencing, 130+ acres. We just heard a few minutes ago, it's now 30%. So you went from 13 to 30% so in one day. So they got a heck of a jump on it, but the winds have picked up. So it's so you live there in Flagstaff, the gateway to the Grand Canyon. So we're kind of anxious. We want to listen to you closely about how is the Flagstaff and the surrounding communities reacting and then dealing with this catastrophe.
Well, our number one is we want to make sure we support our neighbors and our fire crews, which are coming through Flagstaff to support this terrible fire, which is north of us. We're really lucky in that we are not seeing any smoke down here. It's still a bit of a distance from us in Flagstaff, although we are so close to the Grand Canyon. The South Rim is open, so we still have a few of our friends who are coming up through Flagstaff to visit the Grand Canyon. We're still seeing a lot of folks from Phoenix and Tucson and Vegas area, which are coming up for weekends to, you know, get away and enjoy our weather. I mean, today, right now, it's 70 degrees. What's the temperature there right now?
Matt, what is the temperature right now? He's our weather factor here.
Not to rub it in.
He's quickly pushing buttons.
Our high will be 88 today. So the sunflowers are blooming right now. It's that time of year. So they're all over Flagstaff. It's honestly beautiful. So for us, yes, we have to remain conscientious.
And you have a 20% chance of rain as well, by the way.
Oh,
I mean, since you're dragging me into it, 20% chance of rain. So that may be a little help. Maybe a little help on
the way. We need more. We need more. Yeah. That's what we really need.
We have a 10% chance here in Tucson. So count your blessings.
Oh gosh.
I think the monsoon stalled very early this year.
They forgot us. Yeah.
I think they did. Now it is going to be 111 here, as Matt reported. And Matt, what's the temperature now out there?
It is 86 degrees as of a few minutes ago.
Okay.
Maybe 90 by now for all we know.
And Mount Lemmon is probably a beautiful 75.
But 30 degrees cooler.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that helps. Now, humidity has to be high, as you know, to effectively fight a fire. But I'm really glad and happy to hear that the smoke hasn't reached far down to you folks.
No, we've seen it maybe a couple days, but no, our skies are bright blue and the sun is shining bright.
Well, we want to hear a little bit more from you after the break, so stay on the phone. We don't want to lose you because we want to continue to talk a little bit about tourism and Flagstaff and how the Grand Canyon is certainly the primary reason, not necessarily to go to Flagstaff, but certainly to hang out there and do all the things before they go to the Grand Canyon. And hopefully we'll talk a little bit about the train and so on and all those things that you're familiar with, because you sell the region, and obviously the Grand Canyon is part of the region. This is KVOI, 10:30 a.m., and we'll be right back on The Morning Voice. We're back. Tom Moulton on The Morning Voice. Tim Vemberstedt is the co-host, and Tim has a very special guest. Timmy, let's get you back on with Ellen.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Hi, Timmy.
Yeah, hello, Ellen. So as you heard, Matt mentioned it's going to be 111 degrees here today, and you're sitting at a comfortable 70, high of 88.
Yeah.
How do we drop Tucsonans into coming up to see you? I looked at your website last night for your Embassy Suites by Hilton.
Oh, did you? Good.
Beautiful property.
Yeah. We're centrally located. I know that's a tacky term for us marketers, but our location, gosh, you park in our parking lot, you can walk to downtown. You know, we have a brewery trail here in Flagstaff. Things that I've learned since being a backyard tourist myself. Pretty exciting. You can go to, 8 breweries. You get a stamp, or you can use the website, which can convert to an app on our fancy Apple phones. And then you take it to the visitor center, and you can, as your reward, you get, you'll receive a Flagstaff pint glass to take home with you.
Oh,
fun stuff.
Tom, I think a road trip is in our future.
And speaking of a road trip, I might want to add that, for those of us who are traveling up there and going through Phoenix, there is a sort of reversible lane as you climb out towards Cordis Junction. So, that's always been a pinch point. And so they got a reversible lane. So northbound, when everybody's bailing out of Phoenix on the weekend, you get an extra lane, and then they move that over. Just want to add that in, that they are eventually adding permanent lanes through that path, but it's a lot of work because it's up through a pass. But they do have a reversible lane to kind of help with the weekend going up there and coming home.
Yes. My family claims it saves 10 minutes. I don't know that I can completely agree with that. I need to time it.
10 minutes myself, and 7 curse words. So that's good.
Well, yeah. That's really good. It's actually a lot of fun.
Now, what we've been reporting, and certainly your newspapers have been reporting, what's going on with the fire, and how have the headlines been there? And then what have you as a Hilton property, as well as you being a tourism ambassador, Visit Flagstaff has been doing to get the word out that the entire region is not on fire?
Right. So Flagstaff is, our Discover Flagstaff team is honestly probably, it's the best team I've ever worked with, as far as even a DMO, but they're always putting the word out about being fire safe up here. And yes, these fires, they were started by lightning, so it's not anything that fortunately wasn't started by my man, but we're always really conscientious of our forest and our landscapes and how we have a huge part of protecting it and keeping it safe. And so we're always really trying to spread that word and help support Discover Flagstaff and the city of Flagstaff in spreading that word. Right now, because our sister city neighbor up here at the Grand Canyon, they're going through a really tough time. So our number one focus is right now supporting them and helping them in any way that we can. There's funding that they're going to need to rebuild once that time comes up. But so that any way that we can support them and let them know that we're here is really what we're doing. Fire crews, they're generally here all summer long anyways, just because it's we live in a forest. So we're always trying to make sure that we let them know that we support them and we appreciate them. It's really neat how, and I know we all saw it in Summer Haven during the fire that you had mentioned earlier, Tom, but signage goes up everywhere, and people will buy their dinners. It's really neat to talk to them, and they'll go to a restaurant and say, wow, this family just bought all of our crew dinner tonight. So things like that, much like how we support our military in Tucson. So that's really what we're doing. We don't want to get in their way, but we want to support them.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stories about how the community that isn't in the fire right now has reached out. And of course, there's already discussions going on, especially since it's federal land, to help the concessionaires and the private sector that supports, obviously, the tourism machine up there. To recover quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, that resiliency, I said it right, Matt, that time, is always high, it seems like, in Arizona, where people do come together and work together and restore. And that's what happened this summer, Avon. Community came together. We lost some of our favorite, the pie shop and some other things, you know, yeah. But they recovered. And last time I was up there, it's a little sparse. You don't have as much of the forest, but it's probably chances of having a fire in Summer Haven are a lot less now because of the fire. And it is rebuilding, and that's the most important thing. And lots of federal and state support. And as Mike from the agricultural department told me, that it's not over. We appreciate the continued support, and we'll let you know when we're back open again. We're going to go off to the top of the hour with news and weather and so on. And I know we said 30 minutes, but Ellen, I really would love to have you stick around for one more segment if you could. Could you do that?
Love it. Yes,
all
please.
Right. Thank you, Timmy and Ellen, and we'll be right back with the Morning Voice on the 8 o'clock hour. This is the Morning Voice. We are back. My name's Tom Moulton, and I'm your host for every Thursday. The Morning Voice happens every weekday with a different host. Tomorrow we'll have Dr. Ackerley, where he'll talk about the wonders of the University of Arizona and interview a wonderful group of community leaders. We have been talking during the 7 o'clock hour about the fire that's happening in the North Rim and Grand Canyon. It's called the Dragon Bravo Fire. And we asked our guests to hang in there, because there's a couple more questions we want to ask her. Tim, let's reintroduce your guests.
We have the director of sales from the Embassy Suites by Hilton, Flagstaff, Ellen Jimenez, one of my dearest friends in tourism. Ellen?
And she's very connected to tourism there in Flagstaff as well, as we love her down here in Tucson. Good morning, Ellen.
They're back.
Yeah.
They're on the radio.
Yeah, good morning, Ellen.
We're on the radio.
Yeah, you're back on the radio. But hey, and Matt, where else are we listening to this show?
Oh, you can go to 1030 The Voice on Facebook or 1030 The Voice on YouTube and follow along.
And sorry about asking you with your mouth full. That's what happens in live radio. Ellen, so you're very engaged in tourism, as Tim and I are here. And, of course, we're all of us are affected by when there's a catastrophic event in Arizona. We 50% of our visitors come from Arizona. And so, likewise, we both encourage to visit each other, whether wherever you end up starting your vacation. And certainly the Grand Canyon is, I guess, for some colloquial, the mother of all tourism attractions. And it has two rims. It's a very large hole in the ground. And Flagstaff, being so close to the Grand Canyon, certainly benefits from Flagstaff being the, I guess, in the sense, the hub or the spoke. No, you're the hub of the region before they explore all the things there are to do in Flagstaff, which there are a lot. And of course, eventually they find their way up to the Grand Canyon, spend a couple of days and enjoy all the activities that are up there. And we've been reporting on the fire, as they have since July 4th, which, by the way, as Ellen mentioned, is started by lightning, not by human cause. And so with all the headlines and everything, Ellen, how are you doing up there?
Do you know, we're doing good. We're staying busy. Summertime is generally our busy season here in Flagstaff, much to do with our weather. And then, like you said, we're the hub of travel up here for Northern Arizona. Grand Canyon is just a quick hour and a half away from us, South Rim. So yeah, we're an amazing stopping point or hub or location to lay your head for a few days and visit everything we have to offer up here. Discover Flagstaff found out has made us all aware that we are the city of seven wonders here in Northern Arizona because we have so much to offer and to see, including the Grand Canyon.
Yes, that's one of those seventh wonders, of course. How far is Bear, Arizona from you?
Oh, that's a great question.
That's pretty close,
find out.
I think. That's my favorite attraction in the region.
Arizona? Yeah, Arizona is just here maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And all of your attractions, everything is open in Flagstaff. And that is what all the news is reporting. But you're trying to do everything you can to help keep the long-term vacation planning that takes place going to the Grand Canyon. So I would imagine your hotel rooms have seen a little bit of bump because of a lot of the lodging in the northern the north part of the Grand Canyon has been affected, but Flagstaff, you're fully open and operating, which is good news. And the smoke has stayed clear of the town.
It has, for the most part, stayed clear. We have not seen, but maybe a couple days of hazy skies. But yes, it stayed clear. It's still wide open for hiking. San Francisco Peaks has a beautiful hike, and our hiking trails are staying full and busy. The city downtown is busy. We have lots of folks coming and enjoying our restaurants and shopping. So yes, we're very open and very happy to welcome everybody.
Well, in the earlier hour, you mentioned how you're taking care of some of these firefighters and first responders as they take a break and another crew comes on board. And we really appreciate Flagstaff taking care of all of these folks. And of course, you know, we want the tourists to understand that this is a devastating fire. But the South Rim is open. The train to the Grand Canyon is open. Some of the cities south are open, including obviously the hub, Flagstaff. And we thought that it would be important to hear from a tourism representative as well as one of the fine properties up there. A Hilton property, the Embassy Suites, is open and welcoming visitors that are looking for a place to stay.
Absolutely. We're all very happy to welcome all of you to our beautiful town.
Well, thank you, Ellen and Tim, for putting this 2.5 segments together, because Ellen is a strong supporter of the Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, and the community that supports Davis-Monthan is a longtime resident working at another branded hotel. I'll say it. It's Sonesta, because I like Sonesta brand.
I do.
And especially the one in New Orleans. I love that, the Royal Sonesta. But Ellen, you're a true leader in our community as well now as Flagstaff. We miss you. And we want to thank both you and Tim for putting these segments together.
Thank you both very much. This has been great. I always enjoy talking about our state and our leaders and our heroes. Our fire crews are absolutely our heroes. And then definitely come up to Flagstaff. There's so much to do. There's day trips taking you to the Grand Canyon. There's river tours. There's a train just south of us in Camp Verde Valley train. I know I'm messing that one up. But
Verde Valley, right? Yeah,
yeah.
That's another train ride. Well, and one of the most important thing is that we support Flagstaff, and Flagstaff supports Tucson. So we all work together here to promote Arizona. Again, have a nice day. Let's pray for the fire to continue the pathway to full. It's 30. Went from 13% to 30%. It seemed like in 24 hours. So containment. Let's all pray for large containment over the next week, so we all can get back to
direction.
Work. Absolutely.
Correct.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right, we'll see you later, guys. Take care. Tim, you stay on. Tim, you stay on because you still got some duties to do. Bye-bye, Ellen. All right, well, we're back, and we got just a few minutes before we go on to the next segment. Or did you want to go to the segment a little bit early? I heard some music in the background.
I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. Okay, go ahead. Right. We're still rolling.
I'm looking at the clock, and we're going to come back. Matt, we're going to come back with cut two of the Bravo Fire community meeting because we're going to just play a portion of that. It's a long segment. We're only going to play maybe 3 or 4 minutes because the gentleman that is he'll introduce himself to you is talking about the fire impact to the community and how multiple agencies in the federal government, what they're doing, trying to be fully transparent. And, of course, he goes into what happens after the fire is contained. And I think that'd be very interesting for our listening audience to hear the support of the firefighters and the agencies associated with fire protection are doing to support the community during this, obviously catastrophic incident. So, Matt, let's go into break a little bit early and because we got some things to talk about when we get back. So this is The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Tom Moulton, and we're on KVUI, 10:30 a.m., the trusted local news and talk. Be right back. Well, welcome back. I'm your host, Tom Moulton, for The Morning Voice every Thursday. And we have been talking about the Dragon Fire over there in the Grand Canyon North Rim and some of the details and the number of acres, over 130,000. We heard this morning, it's the latest that they went from 13 to 30% containment. However, there are still evacuations taking place and the loss of 70 many of them historic structures have been lost to this fire that started on July 4th due to a lightning strike. But in our last two segments, we heard how Flagstaff and the local communities around the area are really banding together to help out the folks that have been engaged and or have been affected by the fire. Certainly, you can imagine with 70 structures, but there's been no loss of life, Matt. I have not heard of anything. But unfortunately, some historic and cultural structures have been damaged or completely lost. But the community's coming together. And I wanted to share with you just a small clip, cut two, from last night's Bravo community meeting. It's important to understand how, formerly employed by two government agencies over the past 25 years or so, but I'm really impressed by how these federal agencies have come together, which is now the largest fire in the United States, seventh largest in really history. I don't know how far back the history goes, but let's go ahead and play clip two, Matt.
Good evening. My name is Eric Smith. I am the agency administrator for the National Park Service, Grand Canyon National Park, on the Dragon Bravo fire that started July 4th from a lightning strike. I'd like to thank you guys for coming out tonight and allowing us, the Southwest Incident Complex Incident Management Team Number 2, National Park Service, and the United States Forest Service to give you an in-person update on what this fire, the current condition of the fire, and what we're looking at to try to suppress this fire. You know, first thing I want to do is acknowledge the impacts that this fire is having to you and your community. While the fire is not here in Fredonia, the impacts that are here in Fredonia are not what I would call indirect impacts. The devastation that this fire has caused, the damages, the area closures that it is demanding, is a heavy loss to your economic driver of tourism. And we really want to acknowledge that this is happening. And you are here in Fredonia. The fire's not here, but we understand it's impacting you here. And that's why the Forest Service came to us and said that they wanted to have a public meeting here in Fredonia. So, you know, we stand here as a united team of agencies, not individual agencies, and to give you the assurance that we are utilizing every effort that we can to suppress this fire. This fire has impacted the Grand Canyon National Park and the Kaibab National Forest in ways that are unimaginable before this fire. So, you know, we do understand the impacts. There are also those non-economic impacts that we do understand. I understand that you live here in this area for a reason. You're in this community for a reason. You have a personal connection to this place, the place around here. And you have a connection to the tourism that's here. It's the industry, the things that you like. So this fire, and again, the closures that is demanding, is heavily impacting you, and we all appreciate that fact. This has been a full suppression fire from the start, and we are using every single resource that is available to us to suppress this fire. And, you know, myself, I came from another park to come here to help as agency administrator, and I'm not working from the South Rim. I am embedded with the team to be able to work and directly with the team, all of their divisions and the incident commander, to be able to give them the information and quick decisions for them to be able to react to the fire conditions. The prolonged dry conditions that you guys have had here on the plateau have made this difficult area to fight fire in even more difficult. So, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir. You guys do understand that. But like I said, we wanted to come to your community to assure you that we are all here and throwing every resource we have, every tactic, aggressive tactic that we can come up with to suppress this fire. We are utilizing them both on the park and on the forest to get this, to limit any further destruction and damages that this fire may cause. So with that, I'll turn it over to the United States.
Okay, so that was a ranger from National Park. You know, what's happening, despite, you know, what this is doing, the community and along with state and federal leaders have already started to mobilize discussions around relief grants and low interest loans to support displaced workers and small business owners, recognizing tourism as the region's economic bloodline. So the folks that have been affected by this fire are you know, doing the best they can. The communities around them where the fire hasn't affected them directly have mobilized to help them. The Grand Canyon, while it gets about 17% of the Grand Canyon business, and a lot of, and it's a completely different look at the Grand Canyon and with the Ponderosa Forest and the cultural activity that's up there. You know, it's continuing to operate the South Rim. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, over 1,300 now folks fighting the fire, from the helicopter pilots to the folks on the ground, multiple federal agencies, and where they're doing the best they can to suppress this fire. But as you heard, with the climate things that have been going on with the drought and obviously a lot of brush in the area, you know, it was a quick fire, a hot fire, and but they're getting a handle on it, which is good news. So that's kind of going to wrap our I think there's one more segment that I'm going to play at 8:30, and that would be the fire behavior analyst. And we're going to play him for just a few minutes, right when we come back from the break, Matt, because I think this is good for you all to listen to, because this gentleman is a fire behavior analyst, and for all of us that live in rural areas or forest areas that are in a drought, this gentleman does a really nice job explaining to anyone that can listen, including a public audience, when he first did this. Now, keep in mind, this was done last night, and there's been some from 13% from what we heard this morning from Arizona Public News, or the news that we have here, Matt, is a statewide Arizona news agency.
Yep.
It's very credible news agency. It said that it's now 30% contained, even though some of the stories that we're reading on are saying 13%, but it's still serious. And I think when you hear the fire analyst talk, he's going to explain to you why this fire is still a dangerous situation and could get out of control again, but hopefully it won't. This is the Morning Voice, and we'll be right back. Well, we're back, and we've been talking about the Dragon Bravo fire on the Grand Canyon North Rim. And I wanted to have you all listen to Stuart Turner. He is a fire behavior analyst with the U.S. Forest Service, and his work focuses on forecasting wildfire behavior. This fire has been a little bit unpredictable, but let's let Stuart tell you what's going on.
My name is Stuart Turner. I'm the fire behavior analyst for the team. As the fire behavior analyst, what I do for the team is I predict what the fire is going to do, where it's going to go, and how fast it's going to get there. And I'm looking at three things out there. I'm looking at the topography, the hills, the canyons, the mountains. I'm looking at the fuels, the pine needles, the leaves, the twigs, those type of things. And I'm looking at the weather. And that's why we bring a meteorologist on staff here, so that we can get an accurate prediction of what the weather's going to do. And that weather today is going to be critical for us. So we're still within that fire behavior weather, if you will. The drier humidities, the wind's going to be a little bit elevated. So that's going to start pushing the fire around, or continue to push the fire around the area. It's very important to concentrate on that weather and the influence it has on the fuels, because the weather will dry those fuels out, and those fuels are what carries the fire. And out here on this fire, or any large fire, the fine dead fuels, those small twigs, the branches, the pine needles, the leaves, anything less than a quarter inch in diameter is what really drives this big forest fire. Even though it's 100,000 acres, it's being driven by the burning of those fine dead fuels. So let's take a look at what's going to happen around the fire area today. Down here in Division Alpha on the Wahala Plateau, we're going to continue to see that backing growth. across the plateau. We're going to see that accelerate slightly today with those winds and those drier temperatures as we start to get into some more receptive fuels down in that area. We're also seeing that starting to drop off the edges a little bit and get down into the side of the cliffs as it finds fuels down there. As we come over on Division Charlie here, It's an interesting area here. This is backing very nicely, about a quarter mile every day, maybe half a mile, depending on the weather and the fuels involved. But that just continues to back, and that'll continue for the next several days until that progression is eventually stopped. Then as we come along the entire western side, this side's not moving at all. It hasn't moved for several days, and I don't anticipate any movement there. But we will still see some fire behavior in there, mostly just from stump holes smoldering and burning out, or larger logs. Those are what are holding the fire all along the western side. Then we get into the top of the fire here on the north end. We had some growth up there yesterday from a spot fire that got out into some fresh fuels, and it made a run out into the more sparse fuels, the fuels that don't have a lot of burning potential. It's short grass, very sparse populated fuels out there, so the fire struggles to carry through that. It needs wind to push it into it, but once it gets out into the rocks and the soil out there, it just goes out by itself. But we still have some work to do up there. The north end of that will continue to grow and spot out today. I anticipate that. As we come down the east side, the winds are going to be out of the southwest, so that southwest wind is adverse to that side, so it wants to throw any kind of spots out there or push that out. Fortunately, however, there's not a lot of heat in this area. A little bit here and there, but not a lot for it to get out and move around, so I'm not anticipating any kind of big movement there. We may see incremental growth as it finds a little bit of fuel here, a little bit of fuel there. And then that brings us back down to where we started in the Walhalla Peninsula down there. So that's going to be the fire behavior for the day. Some growth around the perimeter, but not a lot. Thank you.
All right. That was fire behavioralist and analyst Stuart Turner. He's doing this now, or has been doing this daily, and he gets a little bit better, and the fire gets a little bit more predictable, but it is certainly subject to the winds and the weather, as he mentioned. So this basically wraps our coverage of the Dragon Bravo fire. It's devastating, we hear it's they're on their way to containing. Weather hopefully will cooperate with some monsoons. I have a 20-30% chance of rain. The humidity was a little higher last night. We send our love up to everyone there in the north side, and all the folks that have been in been part of this fire, unfortunately, and have been many of them have lost their job and lost their buildings. But the agencies that are involved are doing the very best they can to help out the community. And as we mentioned early on, Flagstaff and the local communities are welcoming the folks, including the fire incident managers and their crews as they continue to fight this fire since July 4th. Well, Matt, let's get back to other tourism news. And Timmy, you're back on again to talk about your most favorite events. Are you still there, sir?
Still here, sir.
Let's go ahead and share. Nice thank you for being part of that and having Ellen come on. We have four minutes left on this segment, so that should give you enough time to talk about those five or six events that we're broadcasting today.
Got a busy couple of weeks. I'll start off with Chilling at the Chule. You can check out live music, spirits, and bites at Tohono Chule's summer series. Tohono Chule's partnered with the Children's Museum, Oro Valley, to provide family-friendly nature play. And it's Fridays and Saturdays through August 30th at Tohono Chule Park. And the cost is free. So that's always nice. But bring some money for some food and drinks and enjoy a cool night at Honolulu. And we have summer safari nights. Beat the heat and explore the outdoors with Reed Park Zoo's summer safari nights on Friday and Saturday evenings. Runs from 6 to 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays at the Reed Park Zoo. They do a fantastic job over there. And we have, of course, cool summer nights still going on at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Cooler temperatures out there. You know, bring a flashlight to walk around. The animals are very active at night. The stingray touch exhibit will be open. And then themed activities, 6 to 10 p.m. Saturdays through August 31st at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. And then, of course, we have Saguaro Sunset at Old Tucson taking place August 12th. Moonlight Music Nights and August 23rd. Let's see, eclectic array of arts, crafts, food vendors, cool summer evenings strolling the historic Main Street and Town Square, supporting local artists, enjoying live music, tasty food and drinks. Admission is free, parking is free. Then we have the Sabino Canyon Nightcrawler event, which is new. Sabino Canyon Crawler Nights, Saturdays now through October 25th. And let's see, that takes place 7:30 to 9 p.m. on Saturdays at Sabino Canyon Recreation Area, 5700 North Sabino Canyon Road. And you can learn all about these events at thisistucson.com. And visit Tucson.org. They've got all the pricing, the schedules, everything you need to know.
Thank you, Tim. We had a discussion with Matt and regarding, it seems like there's an increased number of events this summer, and Matt asked the question, why do we think that is? And I think that's because, one, we have a lot of active folks out there, especially in the attractions area, that are trying to help this community become a year-round tourism community. Historically, yeah. We're kind of the reverse of the rest of the state, where our high season is in the fall and the winter and in the spring, and where the rest of the state up north is the typical four seasons. We only have about two seasons here. A particular note that we are in somewhat of a capital boom here now. There's eight new hotels that are in the pipeline and throughout the Southern Arizona region. And we're now ranked the 12th on the Wallet Hub's 225 list of best cities for staycations, outpacing every other Arizona city. So, yeah, before we go to break, I wanted to share that with you because, you know, while the tourism since the COVID, you know, had a huge boom because folks, you know, wanted to get out of the house, then we were in a little bit leveled out. And now it looks like with all this capital investment, there's a lot of people that are very interested in coming to Tucson, and we certainly have one of the best welcoming spirit when people come to Southern Arizona. So we're going to go to our final commercial break, and we'll be back for a few thoughts to end the show. This is The Morning Voice, and I'm your host, Tom Moulton, on 10:30 a.m., the voice, the local, trusted local news and talk station here in Southern Arizona. And if you've been listening, we've been talking about the Dragon Bravo fire. And, you know, by surpassing, I should say, the 100,000 acre megafire mark is what they're calling this. And it was so rapid and it became the largest active fire in the continental U.S. One of the things that the Forestry Service has emphasized in many of its articles is that the Bravo Bravo fire underscores both the intensity wildfire threat in the Southwest and the challenges facing land management agencies under their strained resources. This particular fire has caused many agencies to focus in our northern Arizona region. And of course, what happens is when all the resources are on one fire, that kind of leaves the rest of the state, New Mexico, California, and so on, because they all work together. The goal here is to get the fire out and start the recovery. And there's already state and federal leaders have started to mobilize in their offices in Washington, D.C., and local offices to discuss about the recovery plan, relief grants, low interest loans, and so on. A lot of the surrounding communities are supporting the displaced workers and, of course, the firefighters. And so we wish them all well during this process of suppressing the fire. We here in central and southern Arizona are continuing to experience high heat, record heat, right, Matt? And today is going to be 111. So for all those mountain lemon lovers, go over there and enjoy some chili at the ski resort. And I think, as you mentioned, it was going to be in the 80s, low 80s up there. And stay cool. And we want you to be able to enjoy the outdoors, because that's what Tucson and Southern Arizona is all about. And we're happy to report every week to you Tim's favorite special events. We do encourage you to go to the visittucson.org and This Is Tucson website from our sponsors and our partners who spend a considerable amount of time making sure that you are aware of our vast number of events and festivals that are going on. The Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance has partnered with the Southern Arizona Festival and Event Association, which is connected to the International Event Group, and which we just renewed our membership there. And we are always looking for different ways, different themes for events. Just to name a few, the Tucson has many downtown events as well as local events throughout Southern Arizona. And so we encourage you to go to some of the other websites that are out there that talk about all the events, especially in the surrounding cities in Tucson, which are along the Highway 80. I just came back from a meeting in Tombstone, and we talked about the historic Highway 80. And by the way, the Highway 80 was the largest east-west all-weather route, and there appears to be an effort to bring Highway 80 back. Route 66 is sponsoring its 100th anniversary. But the Highway 80, we just saw new signs go up on Oracle Road identifying that historic Highway 80 also goes through Tucson. Matt,
there you go.
My discussion.
It took a meandering route. It came into the state in Yuma, it looped up through Phoenix, and came down through Tucson, and then out through southeastern Arizona, through Douglas. An interesting story about that.
Yes, and part of my meeting in Tombstone was, how can the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance help to further this cause. Well, thank you for joining us. This is our we're going to have a new show next week, and it's going to be about philanthropic work on helping the attractions here in Southern Arizona. This is the Morning Voice. I'm Tom Moulton, and thank you for joining us this Thursday morning. Have a good day.